Okay, good morning. We'll get started now. What we're going to cover for the next few lectures is sort of the low-level details about radio systems, so just some aspects of transmitting digital signals over a radio carrier. Okay. So what we're going to look at today will be sort of the steps you need to go through to prepare a signal to be transmitted. And then next time we will then look at the characteristics of the actual radio channel. If I can get anything to move. Okay. There we go. Hopefully I'm recording as well. Going again. Okay, sorry about that. Now, in terms of references, the notes are primarily drawn from chapters 6 and 7 of the William Stallings Wireless Communications book. So that pretty much covers what you need to know for this module. They're just slight repackagings in terms of the system, but all the topics are covered. Okay. And after that, it depends on how sort of enthusiastic you are about, again, the low-level details, wireless comms theory, pretty much. And if you like that sort of stuff, then the Andrea Goldsmith book is very good about sort of all the characterizing radio channels. And this probably actually applies more to tomorrow's lecture, next week's lecture than this week's. And also the Introduction to Wireless Systems by Bruce Black and company is quite a good. It starts again with sort of fundamental principles and moves through cellular technologies, etc. They're not required reading in any sense, but they are sort of good references. Okay, so the model I'm going to show is, if anybody's sort of taking or taken a data comms, comms theory course, you'll probably have seen something like this. Perhaps you'll see sort of components of this in a signal processing course. But the idea here is that if you start with some sort of signal you want to send, and we're going to assume that that message is an analog signal, so again, a voice signal. If you already have a digital signal, then you can sort of skip a few steps and go sort of jump straight to channel encoding. But assuming you have an analog signal, well, the first thing you have to do is digitize it. So you have an A to D converter to do that. After that, you might want to, in some way, process the digitized signal to try and compress it to save bandwidth. So source encoding gives you different ways of, again, representing this digital signal. And again, the goal is to sort of use as little bandwidth as possible and get the highest quality signal out. Okay. Um, channel encoding refers to dealing with errors, so providing mechanisms for error checking. So again, we have to assume that not all of our bits are going to get there correctly. So do we want some mechanism to decide when things are correct or not? Again, this is typically handled by adding extra bits, so adding some, sending additional information to your source signal. And you've seen some examples of that if you've taken, again, a basic networks course, and usually you see something in the error handling at the link layer. Okay, so cyclic redundancy codes, Hamming codes, things like that. We're not going to deal with the coding, so I'm not going to go over sort of the different techniques for coding again. But what we would like to observe is that we can, again, improve the signal recovery of the system. So, once we've done that encoding, so again, we just have a sequence of bits, we somehow have to form up those bits so they can be transmitted. That process is modulation. And in our case, that means representing the bits in some way using a sinusoidal signal. Okay. And again, typically you'd see a lot of that when you're talking just generically about the physical layer of networks. We're going to take a look at it, and we're going to look at how it specifically applies to wireless networks. Some modulation techniques are pretty much only applied to wireless networks for the purposes of dealing with, again, the characteristics of radio channels versus wired channels. So, again, you have lossier channels, and the loss can be a function of what frequency you're transmitting at. So certain techniques, namely spread spectrum techniques, are designed specifically to deal with the characteristics of our radio channels. Okay, so we're going to go through sort of each of these ideas, these sort of blocks in turn, and we'll say sort of more or less about any given block depending on how relevant it is to, again, specifically wireless systems, and depending to some extent on whether I think you might have seen it somewhere else. The radio transmission, so the characteristics of the radio channel will be dealt with in the next lecture. But again, they are all taken together to provide sort of end-to-end wireless digital communications. And sort of, again, obviously, whatever you do in sending a signal, you have to then sort of undo at the receiving end. Okay, so today, again, we're going to concentrate on the different blocks of this system model, leaving out the radio channel specifically, and potentially sort of breaking off before we've completed modulation as well, since I think spread spectrum is important. We'll see sort of how time goes, but I don't want to rush the discussion of spread spectrum either. Okay, so in terms of topics we'll cover today, we're going to look at measuring the performance of the radio systems. And basically, there's a couple of measures. One is overall capacity. So sort of what bit rate can you achieve in a system? And this is impacted by your bandwidth and your signal-to-noise ratio. Okay. So we'll have a look at sort of basically what the terminology is and how we tend to look at these systems. The idea is that, again, as we go through each of these blocks, so our source coding, our channel coding, each of these is can be said to in some way have an impact on our signal-to-noise ratio, okay? And in some cases negative, in some cases we hope positive, okay? And so, again, as we go through, we're going to look at, well, techniques that are used for each of these blocks, and we'll also say a word on how they impact on performance, so how they impact on our signal-to-noise ratio. So the blocks we're going to look at, again, are source coding, and here we're going to concentrate on techniques for encoding speech. Okay. And again, typically in wireless systems, the goal is going to be to sort of reduce the bandwidth required. Okay. We'll say a few words about channel coding. Again, mainly just to, again, emphasize that it has some impact on our ability to correctly decode our signals or correctly decode our messages. And finally, we'll look at a number of modulation techniques, so a number of ways of representing bits using a sinusoidal carrier frequency. Okay, so a number of these you have probably seen in previous modules. Basically, when you have a carrier frequency, you can change your phase, your amplitude, your frequency, or some combination of all of those in order to produce distinct signals representing distinct bits or distinct multiples of bits. And so we'll go through a lot of those techniques. Again, we'll have a look at how those techniques, what sort of signal-to-noise ratio characteristics we have for those techniques. And then maybe this lecture, maybe next lecture, or maybe spread over the two, we'll have a look at spread spectrum techniques, which are modulation techniques, again, that are deal specifically with issues arising in wireless channels and try and improve your characteristics for wireless channels. Okay, so starting with performance, and I noticed as I was going through that I had used a number of different letters to represent bandwidth. So I changed from a W to a B for the lecture. But one of the fundamental theorems of communications theory is the Shannon capacity theorem. And this theorem says that your channel capacity, and so that's the bit rate at which you can send data, is a function of the bandwidth of the channel and the signal-to-noise ratio. And specifically, C equals B log 2, 1 plus S over N. Okay. So this gives... This assumes sort of very specific noise characteristics. Specifically, we're talking about white noise on a physical channel, and gives a theoretical limit to what bit rate you can achieve. So it gives you some idea. In practice, it's unlikely that you'll actually achieve that limit. Sort of being able to achieve that limit, again, depends on the sort of coming up with clever coding strategies, etc. And so it's not, a lot of times it's not worth your while to push up too close to the limit. Okay. So, and also, as we'll see as we go along, our signal-to-noise ratio is not impacted just by noise, but we'll see as we go along that we can think of sort of various errors that occur as we're transforming our signal as having an impact, having a noise-like impact. Okay, so if your signal is distorted, in some ways it's like sort of just adding noise to the signal. Okay, and so again, as we go along, what you'll see is that the various techniques used are going to have an impact on the signal-to-noise ratio. Okay, so signal S in the signal-to-noise ratio is our signal power, and N is our noise power averaged. If we're dealing with digital systems, frequently we normalize both those terms to a per bit term. Okay. And so in this case, we get the ratio EB over N0, where EB is your signal energy per bit, and N0 is your noise power over a bit time. Okay, so just, instead of just taking a sample or sort of average over the entire signal, you look at it specifically in relation to a bit being transmitted. And these terms can be related back to S and N. So our overall noise is given by sort of noise density times your signal bandwidth, and also your energy per bit is given by S over your bit rate. Okay. So, again, just working out, you get that EB over N0 is equal to your signal-to-noise ratio times your bandwidth divided by your bit rate. Okay. So, you can move back and forth between either one of those terms. Again, when you're dealing with digital systems, typically you use the bit reference. Okay. Now, our factor R over BT, so if you divide, you can divide your signal-to-noise ratio by R over BT here. That has an intuitive meaning. It's the bandwidth efficiency. So, again, it's sort of what bit rate, it measures what bit rate you can get out of a specific bandwidth. Okay. And that's, we'll see that changes depending on your modulation techniques. Okay. So, our We can also look at our spectral efficiency, which is the relation of the channel capacity to the channel bandwidth, so C over B. And we can relate our bit energy to noise term to our spectral efficiency. Okay, and we do that using Shannon's capacity theorem. So obviously, again, this is giving you a theoretical limit to what we can get out of the system. And again, would have had C equals B log base 2, 1 plus S over N. So solving out for S over N, we get S over N is 2 to the C over B minus 1. Okay. Now, we can... didn't actually do that. Okay, I did do that. Okay, so you can change that now, for you can convert your signal to noise ratio to your bit energy to noise ratio, and now you have related those to the spectral efficiency. Okay. And so you can use this to determine what sort of ratio you need in order to get a certain spectral efficiency. Okay, and you'll see some, I threw some problems in for that on, I will throw some problems in for that on the tutorial sets. So the idea here again is just how much sort of, how well you can use the system is dependent on your energy to noise ratio. Okay, so again, we'll return to these terms in the course of the lecture. Again, we'll be looking at how each of the components, or how some of the components anyway, impact on our signal-to-noise ratio, and again, when you go to tutorial sets, you can play around with the various factors and see how they work. Okay, so one slide I threw in, just because some people always ask questions about it, is what are decibels? So decibels are a measure of relative signal strengths. So this can be in the form of a signal-to-noise ratio. It can be in the form of, we'll see next time, power in versus power out for a signal. It always refers to the difference between two power levels. Okay. And that difference is measured on a log scale. To arrive at decibels, you take 10, log base 10, of whatever, the ratio of whatever you're trying to compare. Okay. And this is... again, it's a relative term. It measures ratios, so the gain from 5 to 10 watts, or the decibels represented by changing from 5 to 10 watts, is the same as the decibels changing from 500 watts to 1,000 watts. But again, the main thing to do is just be aware of how you move from decibel measurements to sort of non-decibel measurements. And again, the conversion is this 10 log 10 factor. Okay, so we'll see. See again, primarily just the, we'll look at the signal to noise ratios or the bit energy to noise ratios as we go along. For the rest of the lecture, again, we're going to move from block to block to block of this systems model that we have, and we're going to start at the edge. So we're going to start with converting our message sources to digital messages and encoding them, so it's representing them efficiently using bits, and move on from there. Okay. So there's two possible forms that your messages can take. They can be continuous functions of time, or so an analog. Stream an analog signal, or they can already be a stream of, they can already be a bit stream. Okay. Now, obviously, what we're talking about for source coding refers to our the conversion of, or well, what we're specifically dealing with refers to the conversion of analog signals. It is possible to do source coding on bits. Basically, this means using information theory to compress the number of bits you need to represent the information that you have. But we're not dealing with that here. We're dealing specifically with the conversion of an analog signal, and very specifically a speech signal, into a digital signal. Okay. And so typically, the process that needs to be gone through is that the speech signal is sampled. So you periodically see what the value of your signal is. And then the samples are digitized. So you have a digital representation of each sample. Okay. Obviously, when you digitize a sample, you're taking something on the continuous domain and placing it on a discrete domain, so you're going to introduce errors. You can't necessarily get the exact value for any given sample. Okay. And so again, one can quantify the errors introduced here into a factor impacting your signal-to-noise ratio. Okay, so again, it's another way of introducing sort of uncertainty into the system, and we can think of that uncertainty as being noise or noise-like. Okay, source encoding then refers to the attempt to compress the data in order to transmit it more efficiently. It is entirely possible, again, to compress digital data. We're not going to look at those types of techniques. We are going to look at encoding techniques for voice signals, particularly when you look at the mobile telephony world. The compression of voice signals is a big issue. Okay. So we're going to look at primarily our source encoder. We'll again look at taking the voice signal, sampling it, and then encoding it. Um, There's a number of speech coding methods. Again, our classic 64 kilobit per second has been used forever in telephony, in wired telephony services, our POTS services. Okay. And it produces a very good quality of voice reproduction. Okay. It's generally deemed that the human ear can't tell the difference. The problem with this is that, again, in a wireless system, there's a premium on our bandwidth, and so there's a desire to reduce the bandwidth requirements for a voice signal as much as possible. Okay, and so a number of techniques exist that can get the bandwidth down quite low. The 2.4 to 4.8 kilobit range is not a good voice quality at all. At 8 kilobits, you can get reasonable quality. Again, it's been shown that in a wireless, in a mobile setting, people are more tolerant of the sort of quality degradation than they are for their wired telephony system. So you can get away with not quite as good a signal. So what we're going to do now is have a quick look at these various techniques. And so, again, the sort of classic technique is your pulse code modulation. And what you're doing here is, again, just sampling your signal at an appropriate interval and digitizing that sampled signal. The following coding methods, differential PCM, adaptive differential PCM, delta modulation, and I think I actually I got rid of this one. I didn't bother saying anything about that one, the continuous variable slope delta modulation. All of those are essentially variations or slight twists on the basic PCM, the basic idea of sampling. Okay. And again, you can get down to lower bitrate requirements using these. Now, model-based coding is sort of philosophically quite different. The idea with model-based coding is to do just that, mathematically model a speech signal. So you have some function that represents your speech signal. Then to get sort of specific instances of that speech signal, what you do is essentially curve fit. So you end up sending parameters of that model instead of the actual sample of the speech. Okay. And the good news with that is, again, you can get down to very low bit rates. The bad news is that the quality is not that great. Certainly, your basic LPC is very synthetic sounding. Okay. Most mobile telephony codecs are based on some sort of model-based coding. We'll look, a lot of them take, again, the LPC and sort of try and make it sound a little better by adding additional information. We'll look at one technique for doing that. A lot of the mobile codecs they use proprietary solutions and or quite complicated solutions, so we're not going to deal with any specific solutions, but again, be aware that they are going to be model-based, and they are going to be at a much lower bit rate than your PCM. Okay. So, I've said that you sample at an appropriate rate, and again, this is one of those fundamental theorems that you'll see in comms theory, and or probably in signals and systems, actually. But if you signal if you sample a signal at a rate higher than twice the highest signal frequency, then you can recreate that signal completely. Okay. And so you do that using filters. So what you have to do, again, is find out what's the highest frequency of your signal and then sample at twice that frequency. Again, voice sampling, the highest frequency is about 4 kilohertz. And so you want to sample at 8,000 samples per second. It's possible you have something outside that range, but again, typically it's not going to affect the quality if you lose it. Okay. Again, we can, once we've sampled it, we then have to quantize that sample. So you have to represent it using a finite number of bits, and that's going to introduce, again, a bit of error. You're not getting the exact sample, you're getting something close to the exact sample. And the impact on the signal-to-noise ratio, again, we do this in decibels, so the difference is a function of the number of bits that you use to quantize your signal. And as you would expect, the more bits you know, the higher the signal-to-noise ratio, so the better your reproduction is. Okay. And so typically with voice, we're going to sample at 8,000 samples per second, so twice the maximum frequency. And we're going to use 8 bits to represent each sample. So taking a look just at an example, this example uses only 4 bits to represent for our quantization value. Why? Because we can actually draw that easily enough in a graph. 8 bits would you'd have too many lines on your graph. But the same idea applies. Okay, so you sample again at twice the frequency of your signal. And then at each sample, you're not going to hit, your sample is not going to hit sort of a quantization point exactly. And so in this case, well, we're assuming our signal goes from 0 to 15. So our quantization is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 15. So that's, you know, how many levels you can represent with 4 bits, and at any given point, you just move from your actual value to the closest quantized value. Okay. And so, again, you're not recreating the signal exactly, but fairly close. Okay. And just as a note, all of these figures you'll see are from Stalling. You can look them up in the book. Okay. So there are a few sort of added tweaks which are typically implemented for pulse code modulation. The first one is added to deal with sort of variable strength signals. So if you're in general, you have to account for sort of a maximum volume, but at any given time, you know, a person might not be speaking at that maximum volume. Okay, so we're accounting for shouting, but typically you aren't shouting all the time. And the problem with this is that sort of the error is sort of not, the error that's introduced by quantization is not relative to the signal strength, but it's more of an absolute error. And that means that if your signal strength is low, the relative error is going to be greater. And so in a pulse code modulation system, there are going to be a number of techniques for, well, there's two basic ways of getting around this problem. One option is to use nonlinear encoding, where you use more of, you know, for instance, you would use a log scale in defining your sample levels, so you'll have more sample levels sort of around the low power regions or the low strength regions. And so again, that means that if you do have sort of a low amplitude signal, again, you've reduced the absolute error introduced. Okay. And that's one very typical way of dealing with this. The other option is to pre-process your actual signal and essentially either compress or expand the signal that you get, so increase the amplitude of the signal you get, to use the entire quantization level, so keep your quantization amounts fixed, but stretch out your, if you have a low volume signal, just stretch it up so that, again, you're using the entire spectrum. Naturally, when you get to the other end, you'll have to reverse that process. Again, in either way, you're allowed to deal with different volume signals, getting the more or less the same relative errors now. Okay. So the bottom line for pulse code modulation is that it does give a very good reproduction of a voice signal, and it's sort of the baseline bit rate that we need for transmitting voice. Okay. And your telephony channels are designed to transmit this PCM-based signal. Now, taking that sort of as our baseline, we can then try and have a compression of the signal, okay, so a reduction in the bit rate that we need. Okay. And differential post code modulation assumes that the changes in the signal are not going to be huge. Okay, so if we have a look at specifically this signal, we can see that at each time we've jumped at most two quantization levels. Sometimes we only jump one quantization level. Okay. So instead of sending the signal sample, what we're going to do is send the change in signal samples. So the change in the quantization levels. Okay. And again,
for, in this case, well, we would only need to send either plus, the only things we need to do are send plus or minus at most two levels. So that can be represented with less than our 8 bits. Okay. In general, it's thought that 6 bits is enough to give a reasonably good representation of the signal. Obviously, if your signal does jump more, sort of a greater level than can be represented by our 6 bits, it's probably plus minus 32 levels, then in that case you are going to have some loss. Okay, so you're not going to get a perfectly accurate representation of your signal. I forgot to turn off my Skype. Okay, so what do we see from this? We see that we can reduce the bit rate, but we do it at some added error, some added degradation of our signal. The hope is that it's not too great. Okay, now our adaptive differential pulse code modulation sort of increases or attempts to increase the efficiency of differential pulse code modulation by predicting the change of levels based on observing the changes for a number of time periods. Okay, so again, here, if you jumped to the previous time, you might guess that you're going to jump to the next time. But at some point, you'll observe that you start only jumping by one, so your prediction would be that you're only going to jump by one. Okay, so the prediction allows you to reduce, again, the amount of information that you're going to send. So to some extent, it's getting closer to our model-based. We have a mathematical model for how the signal is going to behave. We still are basing it on observations of the actual system at sampled time intervals, but you're getting closer to that. Okay. So in this case, we can drop down to 4 bits to a 4-bit quantization of our sample. And so again, you've reduced the bandwidth by half. Okay. Now, delta code modulation, delta modulation is sort of an extreme case of differential pulse code modulation. Here, we assume that the signal is only going to change by one quantization level at a time. Okay. And so what you see is that you end up getting sort of the general shape of the curve, but at any given time there can be a fair amount of inaccuracy between the signal, the actual signal and the quantization level. The obvious benefit is that it requires a very low bit rate. You only have to send either an up or down signal, so you only need essentially one bit to represent it. Okay. And so, again, this is not going to give you a very good recreation of your signal, but you have excellent data rates, 16 kilobits per second, so a quarter of your typical PCM. This is used in some military applications where, again, they're not too worried about quality, they just want basic connectivity. It's not really used in sort of commercial wireless systems. Okay, so that's one category of voice coding. Again, they're all of these techniques are sample based, so you start with the idea of you're sampling your signal and you're transmitting that sampled signal for recreation. You might then start transmitting enough information to recreate the sample instead of the actual sample, but it's all based on trying to recreate the sampled signal at the far end. Okay. And we've seen that the bit rates you can get go from our gold standard of 64 kilobits per second down to about a quarter of that. To about a quarter of that, 16 kilobits per second. Okay. So that's sort of the limit to where you can go with sample-based systems. And again, as wireless telephony took off, there was a big question of how can we make more improvements on that. And the idea was that you have to get away from this idea of sampling. Model-based source encoding assumes that, again, you have a mathematical model of your sound source. In this case, we're talking about voice. And that model has parameters. And again, essentially what you need to do is curve fit. You have an actual segment of voice. Say we take 20 microsecond chunks of voice. And we examine each of those chunks and we curve fit it to our representation. Great. Okay, so instead of sending then our actual samples, we just need to send the parameters of our function. Okay. And the question then is, how many parameters do you need for each of these 20 microsecond segments? And the answer is, well, less bits than you would need to send the sample itself. Okay. So one of the first of these coding methods was the linear predictive code. It's going to drive me mad. And it achieves very low bit rates, down to potentially 2.4 kilobits per second, 4.8 kilobits per second.
The problem is that you don't, again, get a very good sound quality for that. Okay. Now, most voice codecs are based on enhancements of this or basic idea introduced with LPC. And, again, for bit rates lower than we can get for our sampled systems, we can get reasonable reproduction of voice quality. We'll look at, or I'll mention, I'm not really even looking at them, I'll mention one algorithm, but again, typically there's a number of proprietary algorithms. Everybody does their own thing in terms of the codecs. Okay, so again, what does LPC do? Well, it looks at sort of a number of parameters for the voice, and it transmits those parameters. So we have loudness, we have is the segment voiced or unvoiced, so is it silence or is it an actual, is somebody talking, pitch, and then, again, just a number of coefficients that represent an actual sort of specific voice characteristics. Okay. So what's transmitted is these parameters, and then at the receiving end, those parameters go into sort of a model, a voice synthesis model, and are used to reproduce or produce the voice signal at the other end. She knows I'm not here. Okay. So, again, the bit rate you need is actually not so great, but the downside is that it doesn't produce a great sound. Okay. So again, each of the blocks is using some of the parameters to reproduce the sound. Okay. So, given this basic, quite nice and low bit rates, but with a desire to improve the quality of the output, additional variations have been proposed on LPC to attempt to, again, improve that sound quality. Okay. And basically what happens is that you send additional pieces of information which it can help to improve the quality. So kelp uses sort of a library or a database of sort of residual sounds, so things that sort of that get lost from the model, and attempt to put those things that have gotten lost back into the model. Okay, so as a library, all you need to do then is sort of tell the opposite end which value, which item in the library to look at, which is best to improve your signal. Okay, so in addition to all the things that were sent before, you're going to send the location of a specific item in the library to use with your signal. Okay, so that's, again, all I'm going to say about source encoding. The basic ideas, again, are that you have to balance out sort of the resource requirements, so what bit rate is required, with the quality of signal that you're going to get. In telephony, they're content to, again, stay with your basic data rates. In the mobile world, this is considered too costly. So again, there's always a push to sort of try and reduce the data rates as much as possible. This does have an impact on the quality of the signal that is, or the quality of the voice that is received at the other end that gets recreated. But again, if your user is willing to tolerate having a slightly lower quality signal, then that's all fine. Okay, so I'm going to call a break here. And when we come back, we're going to take a look at channel encoding and then modulation.